Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 53 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to be the first one to wish you a happy White Paper Day, or known to the non-Bitcoiners as Halloween. So happy White Paper Day to everybody. I hope it's you're going to have a lot of plans tonight, pass out some candy, and try and orange pill as many people as you can tonight while you're passing that out. It should be a good one. So today's show, we're going to have a special guest joining us. Joe Consorti has agreed to come on here and kind of digest or dissect the MicroStrategy news that was dropped last night. In case y'all didn't hear, MicroStrategy has released a plan where they want to raise $42 billion with a B in capital over the next 3 years and use that money to, of course, purchase more Bitcoin. So really big news, and I want to get Joe's take on this so he can dissect and kind of tell us the significance of what's going on. So as soon as he gets in here, we'll bring him up on stage and we'll start asking some questions. But while we're still filing in, refilling our coffee, refilling our bone broth, or just getting the gunk out of our eyes, I want to make sure that everybody understands the reason that we do this every single day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And that's to make sure everyone understands what values our founding fathers fought for and why they're so important. You know, the rights to liberty, the rights to freedom, the rights to due process of law, all of this is extremely important. It shouldn't be taken for granted. And so we need to go out there and talk to our local communities, our neighbors, our friends, and make these changes and show them what a decentralized currency, what Bitcoin can do to help spread our cause for freedom. And I always direct people to what we're doing over in North Carolina with Operation Gabriel. Again, we don't need FEMA or the government agency to come in and help those people affected by Hurricane Helene. We said that we're going to go in there. We put boots on the ground and we showed them what the power of the Bitcoin community could do. We raised over $115,000. So I want to say thank you for all who helped with that. But we were able to be extremely effective with that money. And we went out there and directly helped the people that were affected. We gave them generators. We gave them warm clothing. We gave them internet, communication devices. And most importantly, we just showed them again what we can do as a community. So I'm so very proud to call myself a Bitcoin veteran. I'm so proud that I can talk about this every single day. And I hope you all have that same feeling because it is absolutely amazing. So keep going. Don't stop. Again, we're just starting getting into this bull run. So we're going to get a huge influx of people discovering what Bitcoin is. And so it's important for us to point them in the right direction. So point them towards this and education. Remember, the first time you heard about Bitcoin, I can almost guarantee you didn't dive right into it. You're a little hesitant. So just have those patience. But I see Joe is up here on the stage. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Morning, Coleman. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for the invite. Really excited to chat today. I have to hop a little bit early, but I'm happy to go over kind of the high level details inside the plan and kind of, you know, discuss the significance of this with the people up here on the panel, because it is quite insane what they've gone and done here. You know, it's obviously a $21 million debt raise, but it's also combined with the largest at the money equity offering in the history of capital markets. And so it's monumental. If they can pull this off, and if the majority of the funds that they're raising go to Bitcoin purchases, this is going to be huge. And not just huge from a price perspective, but huge from the perspective of other companies seeing what's possible, you know, with this capital accumulation strategy. So excited to chat about it.
Yeah, and again, this is extremely last minute, so I'm very happy you were able to join on and talk about this. So let's dive right in. And so let's kind of, just so everyone's familiar, during their Q3 report last night, Saylor said that they announced they're going to raise $42 billion over the next 3 years to acquire additional Bitcoin. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but he wanted to buy 526 Bitcoin per day over the next 3 years.
Yeah, if you do the math, just based on current prices, then it works out to something like that. Yeah, something around like 550 Bitcoin per day. And then if you consider that only 450 new Bitcoin are issued a day, or 526 Bitcoin at current prices, rather. Only 450 Bitcoin issued daily. We just had record buy-side demand from the spot ETFs yesterday. I think it was something like 12.6 thousand Bitcoin being purchased by all the US-based spot Bitcoin ETFs. So when you consider that, that's the demand coming from these ETF investors. All these ETFs are purchasing Bitcoin on behalf of their clients to the tune of, you know, five figures worth on a daily basis, at least now. You know, who knows if this pace can be maintained throughout the bull market. I don't think it will be. I think this a lot of what happened today and even on Tuesday had to do with the hype surrounding Bitcoin approaching its all-time high. But either way, it was the largest, one of the largest single-day net inflows since the launch of the ETFs back in January. So global economy, you know, here stateside, we seem to have engineered a soft landing, meaning, you know, the labor market is holding steady. We had great initial jobless claims data this morning. Global central banks are cutting their policy interest rates in tandem. And so you have this global easing impulse that's bringing rates down. So it's making it easier to do business. It's making it easier. It's going to make it easier for businesses to take on debt. Credit spreads right now are at their narrowest. They're cyclical narrows. And so, you know, financing conditions for businesses are good. Layoffs are muted. And so if you consider that the global economy is robust, the United States economy is robust, and now this global easing impulse is underway, it's going to be a great, you know, next 6 to 12 months, ceteris paribus, if the economy can hold up for risk assets. And so you consider that, and so Bitcoin's going to do very well in its own right because it is a high beta risk asset. And then you also look at these, you know, these inflows, these numbers we're talking, MicroStrategy alone buying up more than the amount of Bitcoin that's issued per day, coupled with every single weekday, we're getting thousands, if not like yesterday, 10,000 plus Bitcoin being purchased on behalf of clients in these ETFs. And it's going to be incredible. It's going to be insane this next cycle, or this current cycle rather. We're kind of mid-cycle right now based on cyclical indicators, things like the market value to realized value ratio. We're still not nearly as overheated as we historically get when we top out during bull markets. And so like a pretty reasonable upside target for the rest of this market, whether it's over the next 6 months or a year, is like $150,000 per Bitcoin. That's a very reasonable target. I've heard even more bullish things. But if you just think about it from a pure supply-demand perspective, obviously, Bitcoin has this disinflationary supply schedule. But I have all these new cohorts coming online and bidding up increasingly high amounts of Bitcoin, MicroStrategy included. And then you consider the success of this MicroStrategy Bitcoin strategy is going to drive copycats into the market. Obviously, the vote wasn't brought forward by Microsoft themselves. It was brought forward by a shareholder. But on December 10th, Microsoft shareholders will be voting on whether or not Microsoft should consider purchasing Bitcoin for its corporate treasury. And that's the third largest company in the world, right? And so even if Microsoft doesn't end up doing this, which in all likelihood it will not, it does set the precedent that shareholders at other companies, you know, who may have larger positions in those companies and more of a say and more of an ability to vote, will vote in favor of doing this exact same thing. And so now you have retail and institutions, obviously actively allocating to Bitcoin. You have ETF investors. So all of these people who are, you know, all of these passive flows from people contributing to their retirement accounts and what have you. And that's, you know, they're buying tens of thousands of Bitcoin a day. And now you have corporations like MicroStrategy who are pledging through this capital raise, this kind of revolutionary capital raise to purchase more than 525 Bitcoin daily. And really the only, you know, the only explanation for where the price is going is much, much higher. If you take everything into consideration, if you take the buy side into consideration, the macro backdrop into consideration, it's looking insanely bullish for Bitcoin for the remainder of this year. You know, around the election, maybe on Tuesday, I'd wager we probably get a bit of a sell-off. And then beyond that into Q4 and Q1, it is all gas, no brakes because of everything that I just named there. And then with MicroStrategy, at the very least, we have a buyer of, at the very least, all of the new Bitcoin that's being put online. And so all of the dilution of Bitcoin supply is being offset by a buyer of last resort until 2027, which is 2025 through 2027 is when this MicroStrategy plan is taking place.
So there's a lot to unpack with that, Joe. My first question is, when does MicroStrategy plan on deploying this capital? Are they doing it in just chunks, or are they trying to raise it like the first 21 million or 21 billion? And then like exactly how are they going to do this?
Yeah. So let me pull up the events and presentations. Nope. That is the, all right, let me pull up the presentation. So I wish you could share your screen on Twitter Spaces, but or X Spaces, but until then, the capital raising target by 2025 year end is $10 billion split evenly between equity and debt. And then that ramps up 2026 by year end. They want to raise $14 billion, again, split evenly across equity and debt. And then in 2027, they're going to raise $18 billion. And so these capital raising targets ramp up gradually over the next few years, which makes sense. Doing something like splitting it evenly over 3 years or even front loading it would be very bad for MicroStrategy's stock price. And so kind of gradually easing into this historic capital raise makes a lot of sense. But it is split up across these 3 years, and it ramps up in size from $10 billion to $14 billion to $18 billion. That's what they said in their Q1 2024 earnings, or actually this is mislabeled, excuse me, Q3 2024 earnings presentation.
So just to speculate, and I guess you could assume the reason that they're going from lower to higher over the next 3 years is just based on the Bitcoin cycle. Generally on that, and 3 years from now, the price should come down or have a drawdown. So it makes sense to deploy more capital at that point, trying to capture more Bitcoin, correct?
There's that. And then there's also what it will do to your stock price. So overnight, well, right now, MicroStrategy is at $244 a share. It was down hugely after hours yesterday. Yesterday it was like 251. It went down massively after hours, and now it's up a little bit. You have to consider what the dilution of MicroStrategy stock is going to do for its price. And so for me, I think that is why they're doing it. That is why they're easing into this. They're starting by raising, $10 billion 1 year, $14 billion the next, $18 billion the next. That's why I think they're doing it, because the overarching theme of what MicroStrategy wants to do here, and they talked about this later on in the presentation, is they want to employ intelligent leverage. Intelligent leverage meaning accumulating leverage on their balance sheet, and readjusting that over time in order to maximize shareholder value. And so that's essentially what they're doing here. They have a page on it where they talk about MicroStrategy's treasury operations. And it involves obviously issuing securities, which is what we're talking about here, $42 billion worth of securities split across equity and debt, and then acquire Bitcoin and then adjust leverage in order to fund dividends. And so, and then of course issue more securities, rinse and repeat. And so right now MicroStrategy has, 252,000 Bitcoin roughly. They're aiming with this plan to triple that through 2027 at current prices. Now, obviously, if Bitcoin does hit these lofty targets for this cycle, they won't be able to do that because, even if Bitcoin just moves to 150,000, they're only going to be able to purchase half of what they want to. So they'll only be able to double their holdings. And so that's essentially what's happening here. The reason they're doing it gradually and not all at once is because, MicroStrategy has a market cap of, I don't have my Bloomberg terminal up, that would probably be very good. Yeah, about $50 billion. And so if you are then going and issuing $21 billion worth of new stock just over the course of one fiscal year, that is, increasing your market cap by 50%. They want to do that, and that would be pretty bad for your share price. They want to instead do that over time and acquire the Bitcoin gradually as they dilute their shares gradually, right? They want this to be a gradual thing over time, so they can employ the exact same strategy they've used over the last 4 years, which is this slow and gradual build of issuing ever more fixed income and doing at-the-money equity offerings in order to acquire more Bitcoin. Doing it all at once would not be good for their stock price. Which obviously means they won't be able to acquire as much Bitcoin as if they were doing it over the course of one fiscal year. But it's it's a very good risk management play.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for that. During the meeting, they mentioned that they want to become, and I see this transition with the way that they're speaking, they keep mentioning a Bitcoin financial institution. What are do you assume that he's trying to become his own Bitcoin bank then and lending? What do you take from that?
Yeah, I mean, there's no Goldman Sachs of Bitcoin. There's no JP Morgan of Bitcoin, right? So it kind of makes sense. And when you think about it, the thing that's driving people to invest in MicroStrategy and purchase their debt is their Bitcoin strategy. It's not their underlying software business. Genuinely, like barely anybody who is invested in MicroStrategy today really cares about that all that much. What they care about is that this company using and leveraging the public capital markets in order to acquire more Bitcoin. So they're leaning into that. And with a guy like Michael Saylor, at the helm, they're just completely leaning into that now. Obviously, they have their software business, and that's cash flowing. But what they want to do and what they aim to do is just become this vehicle that purchases all of this Bitcoin, and the public, gets to reap the rewards because it's done via leverage, and it's done in such a way that because of that, investors can generate outsized returns allocating a portion of their portfolio to MicroStrategy instead of just going all in on Bitcoin or all in on Bitcoin and then a little stocks and corporate bonds here and there. By what MicroStrategy is doing, what they're aiming to do is become this Bitcoin financial institution. Over time, I have no doubt maybe they will offer those kind of financial instruments that a larger bank may offer, or a larger investment house may offer. But for now, the aim is to just continue leaning into this. That's what this thing they've been pursuing for 4 years, which is just leveraging public capital markets to acquire more Bitcoin, and completely, juice their stock price as a result and make them a more valuable company with no changes to their underlying software business whatsoever. And so over time, yeah, they may pursue the financial instrumentation route, but for now, this is their strategy. This is what they're doing. Basically just bidding up as much Bitcoin as they can by leveraging the public capital markets. And people are loving it. I mean, it's the talk of the town, obviously all over Twitter, but it's evidence in their stock price too. It's remarkable.
It really is. It's such a huge number that they're going to be trying to generate and deploy. It's absolutely crazy, especially, like you said, the ETFs are just gobbling up a massive amount of Bitcoin daily. And we haven't even really looked into states adding it to their pension plans. Like the CFO of Florida came out, Petronas, and said that they want to start considering adding it possibly Q2. To Florida's treasury. So once you start getting more states, again, that supply shock is going to become extremely real. To me, it's just fascinating.
Yeah. No, couldn't agree more. Yeah, absolutely. What I said earlier, and I was speaking to Luke Broyles yesterday. I was doing a podcast for him, and this is exactly what we were saying. The size of the players now involved in Bitcoin has never been larger. And this is also coming at a time when people are so disinterested in all the other garbage, all the other quote unquote crypto nonsense. And it's evidenced in not only the Ethereum Bitcoin cross when you overlay the two, that's tanking. So Ethereum relative to Bitcoin during bull markets, it usually rises. It historically has risen because all the other crypto garbage has outperformed Bitcoin because it's smaller market cap, higher sensitivity. But this is the first cycle where Ethereum has not risen relative to Bitcoin. The first bull market where Ethereum has just been falling relative to Bitcoin, if you overlay the two with one another. And the new players coming into the market, the evidence that I have that they're increasingly disinterested in Ethereum is that Bitcoin, yesterday was the largest single day for spot Bitcoin ETF inflows since launch. Ethereum is still seeing literally like single digit, like very, very poor inflows, really bad. And if you actually take a look at the assets under management in the Ethereum spot ETFs, the assets under management in the Bitcoin spot ETFs, it's actually underperforming this ETH BTC pair. So it is doing worse than the barometer for, let's say retail interest in Ethereum and all the other crap relative to Bitcoin. The kind of larger institutional barometer for quote unquote crypto interest relative to Bitcoin is falling faster than that. So it's really not looking good for everything else. And you pair it with the fact that no single public company has even publicly discussed putting other crap on their balance sheet. You look at the United States, Donald Trump, RFK Jr., Vivek, all these people that were saying, that are saying, you know, when Vivek was running, when RFK was running, that they would pursue a strategic Bitcoin reserve. It wasn't a strategic quote unquote crypto reserve. It's a Bitcoin reserve. No nation state is adopting any of this other crap. You know, a non-sovereign, geopolitically neutral, absolutely scarce asset. There's only one of them, and that's Bitcoin. You know, because it can be acquired anywhere, it can be moved and held anywhere, unlike gold, where it can't be acquired everywhere and it can't be moved everywhere, and you can put sanctions on it. And it's very difficult to move it around. These nation states are recognizing the value in Bitcoin. And in 5 days here, if we get the outcome that we're expecting in the United States election, then all of a sudden you have the world's dominant superpower actively allocating to this asset. So it's a wild time to be a Bitcoin holder. If people are on zero, I can understand the FOMO that they have right now. But this cycle is unlike any other, not just because the size of the players entering the scene is getting increasingly large, but also as I mentioned, because everything else that isn't Bitcoin is dying on the vine, and rightfully so. You know, thank God for what happened in 2022 with the explosion of FTX and Celsius and BlockFi, because had that not happened, then it would have been even more catastrophic down the line. And even though at the time it was brutal to see, because we set in that bear market bottom of like $15,000, we needed all of that crap to be flushed out so Bitcoin could ascend higher on a much more stable foundation. And that's where we are today, speaking to you on, you know, Bitcoin White Paper Day 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. And so just to kind of take off with that, one, the possibility of a U.S. strategic Bitcoin reserve, what do you think the chances are if Trump gets in that they actually follow through with Senator Lummis's bill? And what significance do you have with the BRICS nations? Do you think that they are acquiring Bitcoin secretly and they plan on using it over the next couple of years once they kind of get the rails and everything ready to go?
Yeah, so I think the likelihood is very high that we do a strategic Bitcoin reserve once Trump gets in office, God willing. We already hold a little bit under the amount of Bitcoin that MicroStrategy has. Well, we own about 80% of the Bitcoin that MicroStrategy holds. MicroStrategy holds about 250,000 Bitcoin. The United States holds 200,000 Bitcoin. So I think that the likelihood of just establishing a reserve and holding onto what we have instead of selling it off over time, which is, you know, kind of what we've done, particularly since the start of this year, we've been selling it off just incrementally. We've gone down from something like 215,000 Bitcoin to 203,000 Bitcoin. So we are selling it off, and we have sold it off previously as well. We, you know, the United States Bitcoin holdings rose to 94,000 in October of 2022, and we sold about 43,000 Bitcoin in December of 2022. And so the United States has sold its holdings off previously. Excuse me, it's early. But I do that the path of least resistance for the United States is, even if we don't allocate to Bitcoin actively, which is what Senator Lummis wants to do with her bill. She wants to acquire a huge amount of Bitcoin, you know, over I think 5 years or 10 years, and then hold on to it for 20 years. Hold on to every single sat that we purchased for a minimum period of 20 years to fix a debt issue. Even if that doesn't happen, I think the path of least resistance for the U.S., even if Bitcoin is still perceived as this risky asset, is to just hold on to what we have and then formally establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve, right? You know, with collaborative, geographically separated multi-sig, you know, and several, you know, probably a huge handful of those multi-sig wallets geographically distributed and secured, you know, in secret locations across the United States, heavily guarded. It's relatively minimal lift to do that, considering we already hold them. So I think that it is highly, highly, highly likely, if and when, God willing, I said, we get a second non-consecutive Trump term come January.
Absolutely. And what about with BRICS?
Oh, yes, yes, the BRICS nations. Oh, one sec, my mom's calling me. Got to answer.
All good. I just want to give a quick shout out to Bobby Schell in the audience. Please feel free to join up here on the stage. I'd like to pick your brain as well. And to everybody else listening out there, BTC Hard Charger, Rowdy Night Train, Johan, Doc, I see you out there. Mickey Koss, feel free to come up here, sir. Yeah, so again, just kind of rolling off with what Joe was talking about, one of the things I think we have to understand is that the size of the players coming in are quite large, but the buy-in price also that people who don't have any Bitcoin right now are, it's out of reach for a lot of people. Not a lot of people have enough capital to deploy to buy a whole Bitcoin at $71,000. And even people that are very well off, I think you could consider a lot of millionaires or people who have a net worth of over $1 million don't have $71,000 or even $100,000 just laying around to acquire a whole Bitcoin. So I think that puts a very interesting play of what's going on. And so as this bull market continues on, I think we just, people acquiring a whole Bitcoin just becomes really too far to attain. So it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. And AC, I don't know if you have any anything you want to add on for Joe or any comments you want to add, but please feel free to jump in.
Yeah, thanks, Coleman. No, you bring up a really good point. The high net worth individuals who, most of their money is stored in assets, right? And it takes time for them to liquidate those assets, convert to cash. I always talk about fiat being slow, right? If you've got real estate property, real estate investments, it's going to take on the order of weeks to months to be able to convert that to cash, to buy Bitcoin. And the other part of that is, you know, the understanding, the conviction, and the knowledge. They don't, you know, they spent 10, 20 years in real estate. They understand real estate and they're comfortable with it. You know, it maintains or keeps up with inflation or it outperforms inflation. So they're good. You know, from the bottom line perspective, they're making money. And if they don't understand the underlying asset of Bitcoin, they're going to be far more hesitant to ape in, as a lot of degens like us or psychopaths or whatever you want to call us do with Bitcoin. And so I think that's going to be the challenge for, you know, the late adopters coming in later, is they don't understand the technology. They don't understand the protocol. They don't understand the revolution. And so they're eventually going to get priced out. And that's true for low income now and then high net worth down in the future. Looks like Joe's back on.
Hey, what's up, guys? Sorry about that. Urgent call. You never hang up on your mom. So
never, ever, ever.
That's right. So we were talking about BRICS, yes?
Correct, sir.
Yeah. So there was a Bloomberg article released, I think, earlier this week or late last week. And it discussed this exact thing. You know, a basket of currencies backed by gold. You know, basically the BRICS nations kind of got together and said, like, this can't happen because gold, you know, sanctions can be put on this gold. So, you know, they can't really do that. And so then it becomes, all right, what is a hard money? What's a scarce asset I can back this basket of currencies with? Which, again, I personally still think is a very silly idea. If people listening have followed me for a long time, the dollar is here to stay for a very, very long time. And that's not bad for Bitcoin. It's actually good for Bitcoin because US dollar capital markets are the largest, deepest, most liquid. And as long as they stick around, Bitcoin will stand to hugely benefit. So even though fiat is our enemy, you know, the dollar being around for a very long time isn't necessarily bad for Bitcoin. It's actually a good thing. But these BRICS nations, Bitcoin is an alternative. The only other non-sovereign alternative to gold that can be completely free from sanctions, that can back this basket of currencies that they want to pursue. And so because of this most recent development over the next several months as BRICS continues to unfold, is if this idea ends up coming to fruition, which it very well may, as geopolitical tensions rise and these nations want to be able to exchange goods and services and trade amongst themselves without the risk of sanctions from the United States, then Bitcoin is the solution to back that basket of currencies. So I believe those internal discussions are happening. And, you know, the reality of China and Russia and India and all these other nations actively allocating to Bitcoin on top of what they already own is going to become a reality sooner than later because of, you know, if BRICS does come to fruition, they will have to back it with something like Bitcoin because of the drawbacks of gold geopolitically. So then you have all these other developed nations and the United States racing to acquire Bitcoin. I just mentioned that the path of least resistance for a strategic Bitcoin reserve will be just holding on to what we already have. If these other nations end up actively allocating and pursuing that strategy, the United States, chances are we would do the very same thing. And the difference is we have the world's deepest and most liquid sovereign debt market. And so the demand for our debt is higher than anybody else. So the possibility, the ability for the United States to issue paper to purchase Bitcoin is much greater than the ability of other nations to do the exact same thing. So we can literally leverage our, you know, unbelievable debt appetite, our unbelievable spending appetite, and our money printer in order to acquire more Bitcoin faster and more efficiently and with less damage to our home currency than these other countries can. So then it becomes a race amongst the sovereigns to purchase Bitcoin. And, you know, today where 2.1 Bitcoin may be unattainable for most people, you know, 0.21 Bitcoin will be unattainable for most people, you know, in 5 years to a decade, if this ends up happening, or even in an even shorter period of time, if this ends up happening.
I think you could go ahead and say even at today's price at 71,000, it's unattainable for most people.
I would completely agree. It's especially considering that, you know, most people want to, or an increasing number of people, and I'm very happy about this, want to start a family. In order to do that, they need to buy a home. People are prioritizing that over things like allocating to Bitcoin. You know, we can go on, you know, all day about, you know, the benefits and drawbacks of renting and buying Bitcoin versus getting a mortgage, you know, and going on the path to owning your own home. But that's the conversation for another day. But yeah, no, I would agree that one Bitcoin for most people, unfortunately, is unattainable. You look at the median salary in the United States, it's right around that mark, you know, if not a little bit lower. So the thought of buying one of them, particularly in the United States, where the whole paradigm is a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds and various, you know, within that various index funds, various sovereign debt, as well as U.S. treasuries, as well as corporate bonds. It's really hard to convince someone to just buy one of this one thing and sit on it. So yeah, I know. And it plays into what we were discussing earlier, where the players are getting larger and larger and larger that are allocating to Bitcoin. It's going to be less retail focused, less individual focused. The early days of Bitcoin, obviously the some of the largest Bitcoin holders today were people that were buying tens of thousands at a time in the early days when it first had a market price of just a couple cents. Now the new biggest players that are going to be coming online and bidding up the circulating supply, and the new supply is coming online, will be these corporations and these nation states. It won't be retail anymore. So it's a fascinating turn of events. A lot of us saw this coming, and it's going to be an extremely exhilarating next several months, to say the very least.
Do you think it happens faster than most Bitcoiners or experts believe, this wave, or do you think it's going to take still a little bit of time to kind of fall into line?
Yeah, so I think it depends on who gets elected, right? I think if Kamala gets elected, God forbid, you know, we probably don't see any formal Bitcoin treasury framework, and these BRICS nations, if BRICS does end up happening and they do want to do this, which, you know, I still believe is pretty silly, and they end up backing it with Bitcoin, which if they did it, they would have to, they would be basically allowed to bid up the supply while the United States kind of sits on its hands. I don't think, you know, Kamala Harris knows how to write her name on a sheet of paper, right? Let alone fight with these other countries and develop a, you know, formal Bitcoin allocation framework. So bad news for the U.S., in 5 days, from a Bitcoin standpoint, if Kamala gets elected, you know, it'll leave a lot on the table for these other sovereigns, not just for Bitcoin, but for other geopolitical opportunities as well. But if Trump gets elected, I'd say, you know, it probably happens faster, because, you know, we have this, we'll in all likelihood get this formalization of our existing reserves as a strategic Bitcoin reserve. You know, we also may see active allocation from the United States if these other countries begin playing that game. So, you know, it largely depends, because a lot of this comes down to who's in charge of these countries. It largely depends on what happens in 5 days, in my opinion.
Okay. I did hear that Donald Trump was doing a trash run actually in your area today. So if you happen to see him on that trash truck, do you mind just grabbing him to see if he would give us a quick little talk about how he thinks the election is going to go?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Yeah, I can. Actually, hold on. I think he's outside right now. Let me go get him. Hey, everybody. I heard that we were talking about Bitcoin in this space. Personally, I love Bitcoin. I love when people play with their Bitcoin. I hope you're having a lot of fun with your Bitcoin. We're going to do good. We're going to make America orange again, people. Thank you, Trump.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm glad that he was able to jump in. For the record, I want to be known as a garbage degen from moving forward. I think that's the new term I want to go with.
I think so. Yeah, I'm going to put garbage in my profile as well. Yeah. What a, you know, obviously not a political space, but what a thing for Biden to say less than a week out. Obviously I know he doesn't know where he is, but I can't help but believe that part of him is very jaded toward the establishment for what they did to him in July, and now he wants Trump to win. But
I'm sure there's some mixed feelings. I really don't know if he has any idea what's going on. I'm sure he has good days and bad days. Especially if you've seen anybody that has dementia. Unfortunately, we have a neighbor that has dementia. And so the similarities are astounding between him and Joe Biden. And there's definitely days where he has no idea what's going on, and then other days that are better. So I assume that's what's going on with Biden.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Hey, I can answer one more question, or we could throw it to the panel for any questions or anything like that. I actually have to bounce sooner than later. I'm going to do a little bit of prep for a podcast that I'm jumping on with Mason Carter from Early Riders in a couple minutes.
Definitely. AC or Bobby, do you guys have a question for Joe?
Hey, Joe. Thanks for coming back to Bitcoin Veteran Space. You know, last time you were here, I asked about, FASB fair value accounting. And I was wondering if you've got any opinions on what that's going to do. You know, during the call last night, Michael Saylor had mentioned that they're going to convert over Q1 2025. And just, you know, what is your perspective on it?
Yeah, so I haven't actually looked into it like I promised you I would. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set a calendar event for this weekend, 2 hours blocked off, to get all of the answers for you, so I'll be better prepared when I come on next time.
Awesome. Thanks, my friend.
Absolutely, man.
Hey, Joe. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for jumping on here. I know it was extremely last minute, and I appreciate your time. I appreciate your insights. And where should we direct everybody to go follow you?
For sure. Yeah. Well, you know, thanks so much for having me. This is one of my favorite spaces to do. I love that you guys have, you know, served this country. I love that you're all into Bitcoin. I think this is one of the most wonderful communities out there. So, you know, I will be back whenever you have me on however short notice there needs to be. And if you want to check out more of my stuff, just, you know, I'm speaking right now, tap the icon, give me a follow. You can stay up to date. I cover Bitcoin, global macro, basically as much of everything as you need to know. And I'm also building a self-custody platform for Bitcoin called Theia, Theya. Really, really cool stuff. I'd suggest you go check it out. We're launching on Android in the next 3 weeks. So really big news. But we're now available on iOS and web. So check it out. You can create really easy single sig, multi-sig vaults, invite your family and friends. Really easy way to orange pill them. And if you're afraid of self-custody, this is hands down the best way to do it. And that's why we're building it. So thank you so much for having me, guys. Talk soon.
Yes. Thank you again, Joe, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy Halloween. Happy Bitcoin White Paper Day. See ya.
Bye. No, I really appreciate Joe jumping on with that. That was amazing. I mean, again, I literally asked him about 10 minutes before the space was supposed to start. And so I really enjoy his work. If you're not following him, go give him a quick follow. He posts really good content. So again, thank you, Joe, for jumping on here. AC, did you have anything else you want to cover with MicroStrategy or the Bitcoin ETFs gobbling up all the Bitcoin?
Yeah, I don't know. And then if you jumped on to the earnings call last night, or if you watched the recording or reviewed the slides, I was frantically grabbing screenshots as it was going. And I threw some of those in the comments, in the pill, in the nest, just for people to check out. But I thought it was amazing. You know, I'd never seen such a well-balanced and energetic, at the same time, Michael Saylor, You could tell that he's got the conviction. I think a lot of people are concerned about key man risk or regulatory risk associated with MicroStrategy, but the plan that they laid out over the next 3 years is phenomenal, and you're already starting to see it on the Twitterverse. People talking about potentially there being a diminished or a tamed down bear market coming up in 26, 27. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next.
I also like how he had mentioned, and again, I didn't listen to the call, but I just kind of saw the highlights coming on X. But I like how he kind of put an end to the NAV multiplier being close to one. He said it can be at 10. Like it doesn't matter. So what are your thoughts on that, AC?
Yeah, actually, there's quite a bit of traffic. Matt UTXO, or if people are looking for him, I think it's Matt_UTXO. He put out a clarification late last night on the multiple to NAV. And, you know, in the slide deck, he had said that they're targeting 6 to 10% Bitcoin yield. And in his talk, he had mentioned, you know, some really humongous numbers like 50X. And people kind of conflated that they thought that Michael Saylor was saying the premium to NAV should be 50X. And so Matt had actually done the math behind it. And really, it looks like, at least from his perspective, it's a 1.8 to, I think he said, a 6X, relatively steady state. And then Punter Jeff, who we also had on the show, he also clarified that by saying, you know, that is steady state, and there are going to be fluctuations and spikes associated with that, especially during, you know, a bull run and the euphoria and the mania. And then also on the flip side, although it could be tamed on a potential bear market, probably not this bear market, just based on, you know, the rate of accumulation that they're targeting, but maybe in the future. So that's kind of, I'm still learning myself. I certainly don't think a 30X or a 50X NAV premium to NAV is realistic. But kind of what folks are looking at, I think, is probably, you know, under 10 or spikes to 10, I think, is more realistic over the next couple of years.
So what does that do for the price then? What could people expect?
For the price of Bitcoin or for the price of MicroStrategy?
MicroStrategy, sorry.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it's a little bit of math work. So like Joe said earlier, MicroStrategy currently has, I think, roughly 252,000 Bitcoin. You take that multiplied times the price of the Bitcoin divided by the number of outstanding shares, and that kind of gives you the expected price at NAV, at net asset value. And then you add a multiplier to that of, do you think it's 1.8? I think we're currently sitting around 3x NAV, or, you know, the euphoria, the mania, the scarcity, the limited supply available on exchanges. Does that premium to NAV go higher? So you take, you know, that calculation of outstanding shares, price to Bitcoin divided by shareholders, multiplied times 5, and that kind of gives you a good estimate of where MicroStrategy's stock price should be.
And once you start going down and seeing all these possibilities, it's pretty crazy what's going to happen over the next couple of quarters. Again, I'm extremely bullish. I think it's going to be very interesting. I think Joe is correct, though. I think a lot of the price action is going to be dictated initially by the U.S. election. But I think by the end of Q1, Q2, I think Bitcoin's just going to do its thing and it doesn't really care. I think both parties are going to be spending a lot of money. Just that initial reaction might be a little bit of drop in price. But it gets pretty bullish when you start looking at all the major players coming in, different nation states, and then just the FOMO of retail hopping in. So.
Yeah, and Coleman, sorry, a couple other things that I kind of want to throw in that I wish we had more time with Joe. I wish we had more time with all our guests, but understand that everyone's got competing priorities. But the other tailwinds that are kind of on the horizon, so to speak, you know, we're coming up on QQQ rebalancing, QQQ, QQQ rebalancing date, I think, is November 29th. And then the inclusion date is December 13th. And so those are right on the horizon. And then the rebalancing date for S&P 500, the next one is December 20th, roughly. I don't think we're going to I don't think MicroStrategy is actually going to hit that target. They need FASB fair value accounting to kind of shore up their balance sheet before they actually are fully eligible. But if both, or I should say when, because I think both of those are inevitable, but when QQQ and S&P 500 include MicroStrategy within their indexes, you're going to see a massive passive inflow of all the funds that have to have a percentage allocation of MicroStrategy within their funds. So you tack that on to, you know, the competition of nation states and sovereigns trying to accumulate, like we talked about earlier about BRICS. We also mentioned Microsoft and other copycats also trying to implement a Bitcoin strategy at the corporate level. And then you layer on retail. You know, the potential here is just, it's mind-blowing on what we could see over the next 15 to 18, 24 months.
Yes. You just start, again, I just try and picture numbers in my head. And I don't think we're all bullish enough as to what's going to happen. I think there's going to be a huge catalyst, and it's just going to be, wow, I can't believe it did that. We're getting to the top of the hour. Let's go ahead. I do want to cover, Jacob, if you can get that video of RFK ready to go. All right, perfect. I'm going to play a video of RFK real quick. I think it's really important. Again, I think Bitcoin is amazing for everybody, and I think the different rabbit holes that you can branch off from it are absolutely life-changing. And I mean that in all seriousness. I think one of the biggest things everybody here on this in this space can agree is that after Bitcoin kind of changed your way of looking at your finances and the way you look at money, the next thing it changed was your health and the way you view food and food and everything else. So I'm going to play a quick clip from RFK, and then we'll go ahead and dissect it.
President Trump has asked me to reorganize the federal health agencies, the agencies that have a portfolio that affects human health, which is CDC, NIH, FDA, as well as some of the agencies within the United States Department of Agriculture. He's asked me to clean up the corruption, number one. Number two, end the conflicts of interest, return those agencies to their rich tradition of gold standard, empirically based, evidence-based science, evidence-based medicine, and to end the chronic disease epidemic in this country. And he's asked me specifically to measurably reduce chronic disease in our children within 2 years.
It's, I think that's pretty big news. So if you missed it, we had 2 weeks ago, Matthew Leisik of Fiat Foods, the author of Fiat Foods, come on this space. And if you haven't read that book, it is a phenomenal book. Always recommend it to people. It's kind of become a 1-2 punch for me now when I introduce people to Bitcoin. Bitcoin Standard is still the book I recommend. I always have multiple copies on hand. And I've been starting to pass out Fiat Food as well, just because, again, it's so eye-opening looking at all the data that he collected and just shows how corrupt the food system is and just how, there's not a better word for it, but evil that all of these people are and all they care about money. And you just trace the money, you can find out all the deviousness going on. And so I think this is really big news. If Trump wins, RFK is going to go in there and start cleaning house. And again, the importance of this is extreme. When we look, I don't know how many of you travel overseas, but when you go over to places like Europe, you can see drastically, or not drastically, you can just see as clear as day, people that are from Europe and everybody that's from North America. The weight difference and the appearance of people from North America and Europeans are astounding. Everybody in Europe is fit. They're in shape. They don't have these giant guts. And when you come back to the States, this is everybody you see has an obesity problem, and it comes from the food. I was lucky enough to go travel in Europe this summer. And again, I wasn't eating healthy by any stretch of the imagination, but I wasn't gaining any weight when I was over there. And again, it's all the additives and the chemicals that they put into their food that makes a difference. So I think RFK getting in here and cleaning house, cleaning up the corruption, ending the conflicts of interest, so allowing these corporations to allow these dealers get through so they can get a placement on their board and start making seven-figure salaries, return to evidence-based science, so making sure that there's actual proof. Like, there's no reason why the food pyramid should have Cheerios and Fruit Loops as a healthier option than steak and meat and cheese. So getting these changes in and implementing them is going to be extremely beneficial for our country, for our future generations. And then the biggest thing I don't think we need to talk about is he wants to have a measurable reduction in chronic disease in children within 2 years. And again, if you take a look at the school system and the children getting on buses or leaving schools, like, there's a big difference from when I went to school to the kids today. There is an obesity problem, and it's stemming from the cafeteria food that these kids are getting fed. There's not a single good source of nutrition in it. They have soda machines everywhere throughout the schools, and it's all being paid for by these corporations. And so I know that was an extremely long rant, but I do think that this is an extremely important thing, and I really do hope that RFK can get in there and clean this all up. AC, if you want to add anything to it, please feel free to jump in right now.
No, Coleman. You know, I think that was a huge mic drop. I had the opportunity to live in Europe for 2 years, and you know, coming back after 2 years being overseas, the difference was stark. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. But while I got the mic, I do want to give a couple shout outs to my boys. So I see Winston, what's up, brother? And I see Daniel out there. Thanks for jumping on. I see you guys all the time. So thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, thank you. And again, we appreciate everybody that's tuning in with us consistently. It makes my job and everyone's job up here on the panel a lot easier. And so we really do appreciate it. And we appreciate the support. And I encourage you to try and bring a friend next time. See if you can get someone else, someone new to join the space and open them up to what Bitcoin can do. Again, we don't just talk about price. We try and talk about a wide range of current topics and things that are going to be really important for everyone. But while we have your attention, I just want to give a quick thank you to all of our partners. Punchplate, I see you all in the audience. Thank you guys for tuning in all the time. I always recommend holding your own keys. If you have your own keys, you need to put your seed phrase on a metal plate. Punchplate.com, go check them out. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. So we are getting to the top of the hour. AC, is there anything else you wanted to hit on? Any fun topics or anything you just wanted to cover?
No. Yeah, I think it was a great space. I love these. Coleman, you do a phenomenal job. And I love that everybody has an opportunity to jump on, especially, you know, some degen pleb like me. So thanks.
Yeah, anytime. And thank you for the kind words. But I really enjoy doing this. Honestly, it's the highlight of my day during the week. And then on the weekends, I just feel sad just because I don't get to do it. Again, for me, this is one of the best things that's happened. I've been sitting on the sidelines watching this for almost 4 years now and getting an opportunity to have this platform and just invite people to come on stage and talk to everybody that I've been watching for the last 4 years. It's very surreal. So I really appreciate this opportunity. And if there's anything y'all want us to cover that we haven't been covering, send us a message. We'll get back to you and we'll make sure we cover these things. So please just don't be shy. We love the engagement. But I definitely want to hit how great is Trump's, and again, I know we talk a lot about politics. Again, it's 4 days until the election, so it's kind of inevitable. So I don't want to make it a completely political show, but how great is Trump's PR team? Like, Biden comes out and calls all of his supporters garbage, and within hours, he gets off of his plane for a rally in Michigan, and he's riding in a dump truck, a garbage truck, giving a press conference. I don't know who's in charge, but it is just absolutely amazing. And so henceforth, I want to be known as a garbage degen, because I think it's just great. AC, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I think it's hilarious. You know, I don't know if it's true or not, but I saw some rumors that maybe Elon is obviously he's helping with the campaign, but I think Elon is like, you know, top three trolls online, and you know, him influencing Trump, I think, may have been part of it, but I think it was a genius move.
I think I saw the same thing with Elon, maybe having a part, as he is, again, the king of trolls. But it is just, that was amazing. I remember saying a joke to my wife in the morning. It was just like, oh, it'd be so funny if he went out and just like did one trash route, did one house. It was like, everybody would love him. And sure enough, he does this. So it made me laugh. And it's memorable. Like, again, we're all talking about it. So that's what counts. Wade, on the Bitcoin Alaska handle. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Anything you want to talk about?
No, I was just going to chime in on that whole Elon is probably advising Trump and is his PR team, but somebody already hit that. So nothing new really on the front of Bitcoin Alaska, just building out as we go. Hopefully have some new speakers lined up next week, have some new announcements.
Excellent. Yeah, and in case you all didn't know, the first confirmed speaker for Bitcoin Alaska, we have Lisa Huff going to be doing a panel during Bitcoin Alaska. So again, that'll be July 5th and 6th. I threw it up in the nest. I clicked the link. Go ahead and click on the Bitcoin Alaska handle right there and follow them. It's just this way you can stay updated with any new events and information being released. But again, I grew up north, so the north has a soft spot in my heart, and Alaska is absolutely gorgeous. I am telling you now, when y'all go to this conference, you're not going to want to leave. It is an amazing, amazing place to be. Just be prepared. I know that in the summertime, the sun doesn't really go down, so it's going to be daylight for pretty much the entire day. I think there's only 4 hours of darkness during the summer, but it is just absolutely amazing. There's so much to do for everyone. So make sure you invite your family, bring your kids, bring your wife. I'm bringing my mother-in-law and my mom to this trip because it's just going to be absolutely amazing. So again, go out there, get your hotels. The hotels are going to be the hardest thing to get just because they're so limited, and then get your tickets for it. And this will be the only conference where if you buy a whale pass, you're most likely going to see a whale on some of these excursions. So don't wait. This thing is going to sell out really quick, and Wade's doing a hell of a job putting it together. So on that note, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show. I do want to thank everybody who tuned in this morning. It really does mean a lot to me. Everybody in the audience. Again, there's so many of you. I can't name you all by name, but I see you out there. It does mean a lot to me. So tune in tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Again, tomorrow's Friday. I can't believe it. This week is just flying by. We're doing it at 10 a.m. Bring a guest with you guys. See if you can do a little orange pilling and bring someone new to the space. And this way we can keep continuing to grow our Bitcoin family. If you haven't seen the Bitcoin video podcast that we did on Tuesday night with Shane and Mike, click on our Twitter handle and follow the link there. It was a great update of what we're doing or what we have done with Operation Gabriel in North Carolina and what we do to do with our efforts to help everybody affected. So check in with that. I want to give a huge thank you to AC and Wade, and of course, Joe, for jumping on this morning. I really appreciate you guys doing everything that you're doing, and Jacob for doing everything in the background. It means a lot to me. But go out there, have a fantastic Bitcoin White Paper Day, or for you non-coiners, a happy Halloween. Give out candy and spread the Bitcoin message, and just absolutely go crush it today. But do not shitcoin. It's like passing Easter candy out for Halloween. It doesn't make any sense.